Today on Central Standard, Emil Cleaver, son of former mayor and current U.S. Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II, talks about his new documentary. The documentary is about KC's first African-American political organization, Freedom, Inc. The idea for the film came about when Emil was taking a class at UMKC.
And I decided to write a paper on Freedom Incorporated. And when I started doing research, I couldn't find anything.
Which led him to collect his own history.
To let future generations know about Freedom.
I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we'll find out about the lengths Emil went in collecting a piece of history while expressing himself creatively.
I paint a picture, show you just how history looks. KC mode, the town is wide open. Paris of the plains with gambling, drinking, smoking. It seems to be tied to...
Kansas City. In the late 50s and early 60s, it wasn't uncommon for limos to pull up in the black community with someone emerging and telling the local folks how to vote and who to vote for. And they weren't asking, they were telling. Until a group of people got together and said, no thanks, we'll decide for ourselves. This is Central Standard, I'm Jabalani LaFall. That group who said no thanks called itself Freedom, Inc. and established itself in 1961, not only to take black power back from mafia-backed influences on the north side of Kansas City, but to help the black community control its own destiny. At least that's the main premise of a new film by Emil Cleaver, a budding local filmmaker and son of former mayor and current U.S. Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II. The title of the film is called Freedom Now. It's screening Friday night, February 24th at 6:30 at the Plaza Library. Emil Cleaver, we have on the show, and we're also joined by Rosemary Lowe, a young woman who was there when it all started, a subject of the film, and a woman who has served her community here in Kansas City all her life. Emil, Miss Rosemary, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, tell us about how this experience started for you, Emil. It started with a term paper in a master's class at UMKC. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was taking a class called the Kansas City Black Experience. It was a master's class in the Black Studies program. And we had to write a paper about a African-American organization, person, or event, something historical in Kansas City. So I decided to write about Freedom Incorporated. And as I started doing research for this paper, I couldn't find anything. I found a few old newspaper articles, but nothing that really was detailed about the history. So I decided to do a documentary.
Well, back up for a little bit. Why did you choose Freedom, Inc. for your subject on the paper? And what happened with the paper? It ended up only being one page because you couldn't find the information, right?
Right.
What made you choose that organization?
Well, I grew up around Freedom. My father was involved with Freedom. So as a youngster, I was always around all these politicians. And we used to go out and canvass the neighborhoods and everything. So I just thought it would be a good organization to write about. And really, I thought that the paper would be easy. You know, I thought I would find a lot of information and it would be an easy paper. I actually had to take an incomplete in that class because I couldn't find enough information. I later came back and got an A in the class, but I first took an incomplete. And, you know, that was the reason why I decided to do a documentary. I knew that it was an important organization, and I was surprised that there wasn't anything out there about Freedom.
Now, you mentioned growing up around Freedom and deciding that to be the impetus for writing the paper over at UMKC, and then the obvious impetus, of course, for you doing a documentary. How did you become a filmmaker?
Well, I've always loved television. My brother and I have a twin brother. We grew up watching TV day and night.
Pastor Emmanuel Cleaver III.
Right.
Note that.
Correct. My family, we would always have movie night, Friday, Fright Night. We would watch the scary movies. So I was always a fan of television and film. But I first started using a camera at a family event. My uncle, Lee Durham, videotapes all family events. And one day he asked me to hold the camera and shoot for him while he got a plate of something. So I started shooting, and that was really my first experience behind the camera. I later worked at Metro Sports for about 4 or 5 years, so I got experience with that. I got away from filmmaking for a little while, then came back to UMKC and went through their communication studies program, and it's kind of been on ever since then.
We're going to come to Miss Rosemary Lowe in a minute here, but tell us about when you decided to make Freedom Is Now. When did you say, now's the time to tell this story?
It's probably January of 2011 when I decided to do it. And the first person I interviewed was Mr. Fred Curls, and he gave me a lot of insight. Miss Lowe was actually the second person that I interviewed. But it was about a year ago, a little over a year ago, that I decided to do the film.
Miss Rosemary Lowe, tell us about the environment in the black community in Kansas City before Freedom Inc. was established, and then take us from there.
At the time Freedom was organized, things were so bad for the black community until Leon and Bruce decided we need to do something about this. So the only way you can really do anything about anything is you have to come together. You have to bring peoples together, and you have to know how to organize. And this was what Leon and Bruce and Freddie Curls and Moppins decided to do. In coming together to bring people together, Freedom was discussing what to do. So then we decided to organize. And a lot of people just said it was just them five organized Freedom, but it was 20 of us at that particular meeting. And the meeting was over at the Carver Theater because Leon had bought the Carver Theater and he owned it. That's where we was having our meetings when we was coming together to get organized. We didn't organize just overnight. We planned it, worked it out, and Leon and Bruce and the whole group had an organization that they could understand where we were going and understand what we were trying to do, and we were there to help the community.
Now, when you say Leon and Bruce, you're referring to Leon Jordan and Bruce Watkins.
That's right.
Luminaries in the community who were founders of Freedom Inc. There was a particular political race between Leon Jordan and Bruce Watkins that sort of started the conversation about that. Tell us about that.
What happened with that, Leon was a Democrat. Bruce Watkins was a Republican. Okay, this is the way it went. Everybody knew Bruce Watkins because he was the funeral director. So the beauticians, which at that time I was a beautician, so we supported Bruce Watkins. And Leon Jordan, he had his group. But after both of them lost in the election, they came together, the two of them, and decided we need to organize because we're too far apart and bring the community together so we can get some help out here. And that's how we got started. And then Moppins was the one who cut Bruce's hair. He got him to come. Dr. Moore was Leon's masseuse, and he got him to come. And Freddie Curls was a real estate person all around everywhere. So that's how the five of them got together to start sitting down talking about it.
Take us into that original meeting. What was it like, and how did you guys come up with the name Freedom Inc.?
The way it came up with the meeting when we was organizing, after we brought some people together that would like to work with Freedom, and it was like about 20 of us sitting there. So we decided we was going to name it, and different ones had little names, but the majority won with Freedom Incorporated, and that's how Freedom got its name. But Leon, he was elected the president that night, Bruce the vice president, and Dr. Moore and Moppins, they all was right there with us. And what I'm saying is, this is where, at that meeting, we decided who was going to be the committee people. And this is how we organized our committee people that night at the meeting. And we had three wards, the first 14th ward, the second ward, and the third ward. And Lucille Denman and Bruce Watkins was the committee people in the second ward. Rosalie Mason and her husband was the committee man and committee woman in the third ward. And Bruce, Leon, and myself was the committee man and committee woman in the 14th ward.
It all sort of came together.
We all came together, and we worked together.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Emil Cleaver, a budding filmmaker and son of former mayor and current U.S. Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II. The name of his project, it's a documentary called Freedom Is Now, a survey of the civil rights organization Freedom, Inc. We're also joined by Ms. Rosemary Lowe, whose voice you just heard, a subject in the film, and a woman who has served the community all her life and was there from the very beginning of the organization. Ms. Rosemary, when Emil approached you about being in this film, what were your thoughts on going back and remembering what Freedom, Inc. stood for, what it did?
Well, when he asked me to come over here, I really thought I was coming to support him. And whatever he told me to do, I was
going to do
it.
You didn't know you were going on live radio, huh?
No. But in the meantime, this is so exciting, and I just really do appreciate him having the confidence in me to ask me to come over. Because that's an honor within itself. And his little brother is one of my little friends also. So it's the thing that all of us are family when you go back to where we started. But the point I'm making is we need to not go back where we started, but we need to try to get ahead.
And we'll talk a little bit about where Freedom, Inc. now, where it is now, as we get through the duration of the show. But going back to Emil, Ms. Lois talked about the environment of racial segregation and discrimination that pervaded Kansas City before the founding of the organization. But there was another element to it as well, organized crime.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Well, Tom Pendergast in the 20s and 30s kind of opened the door for organized crime in Kansas City. And during the 40s, 50s, and 60s, the North End, which they were referred to a lot in the film, kind of controlled the African-American ward. They had an attorney named Lewis Wagner who kind of ran the African-American wards, the 14th ward. And he picked the candidates. He told people who to vote for. But, yeah, organized crime was heavily involved in politics.
We're going to go to a clip right now about the type of obstacles that African-Americans faced at the polls and hear from one of your subjects in the film about the challenges and intimidation African-Americans faced during the era that Freedom, Inc. was founded. Let's go to that right now.
Well, there was some violence, and the white people used to beat people up in the polls. My law professor, Gwen Wells, told us when her father went to vote, he's black, the white people come out and say, "You voted already." And he said, "No, I voted, boss." And they, "Yeah, you voted already." And I pulled out a gun. And they said, "Yep, I voted." And they intimidated people. Bruce Watkins and them used to go down all the time and protect people at the polls. It was not a silent time. Power concedes nothing. You have to understand, back then, they were pistol whipped, beat up, but Freedom survived.
That was a clip from the documentary Freedom Is Now, written and directed by Emil Cleaver, son of current U.S. Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II. And it was all about the intimidation at the polls. Freedom, Inc., the founding of Freedom, Inc., Emil, was just as much about taking power back, neighborhood power, community power back, as it was about racial justice, right?
Right, yeah. You know, Freedom Incorporated is a political organization, but really they're kind of a civil rights organization. One of the first big issues that they fought for was public accommodations. And actually, in Kansas City, we got public accommodations 18 months before Lyndon Johnson passed that bill. Freedom Incorporated fought really for the black community.
You're talking about the landmark Civil Rights Act of 1964 by President Johnson.
Correct. There. Yes.
And such was the environment in Kansas City, Rosemary Lowe, when you had to go in and stand up and eat your food. Was that sort of the environment there before public accommodations? And how did you guys get that done?
How did we get it done?
How did you get it done?
You mean, how did we change it?
How did you change it?
Because we got public accommodation and we got the most. We won by 16,000 votes that afternoon when we got through counting up. And before that, we couldn't go downtown and shop where the other people shopped. And you couldn't try on your hats and stuff like the others could. It was just an uncomfortable feeling anytime you went downtown.
Now, how did you organize the vote? How did it work? You had the leadership, and then you had committees, and then how did the organization sort of come together?
How did freedom come together?
How did your political actions come together? The organization of the actual actions with the committees and the precinct captains and things of that nature.
We organized as a group together. It wasn't a one-side organ. All of us came together and organized. All of us worked out of one headquarters, and there was 26 in Prospect. And that's where Leon's Tavern was, the Green Duck. And it was this building next door to it. That's where Freedom's office was at that time. And we met there, and we would organize, and they would tell us where we was to be, what wards we were over. And then we got our own people to work with us, because at that time, the courthouse had permitted Leon to have all the elevator employees. So Leon had most of Freedom's committee people's, precinct workers with a job at the courthouse. And that was a blessing for us because they were more dedicated because they needed their jobs and they worked hard to keep them. So they got out there and worked their precinct and went door to door. They wasn't sitting home saying, we'll go out the election day and drive around to the polls. You went door to door every day. And in my ward, I could tell if you didn't go door to door because somebody would call me and say, well, nobody's been by here since the election. And I right away would get on the precinct captain. And that is how we was able to get those wards strong. We voted and voted heavy.
In those days, it was also more than politics. There were basic household needs that could be met by Freedom Inc.
That's why Freedom was organized, because there was a need. And we needed not just something to go eat or somewhere to go get some clothes. We needed things in our neighborhoods. Our houses was falling apart. And people didn't have the money to fix them. But the city had the money, and if you didn't know how to work with the city, you didn't get nothing done. But as soon as we got Bruce Watkins, and we had two candidates at the same time. And when we got them, things started changing.
What in particular started changing, Rosemary?
You could go to city hall meetings and sit down at the meetings, and you could listen to what they was doing and learn the process of how the city operates. And I'm still doing it.
The central figures in this organization in the early days, Fred Curls, Leon Jordan, and Bruce Watkins, tell us about who they were as people. Do you have any quirky stories about these legendary gentlemen?
Well, Leon was a policeman officer at one time. The black policemen could only arrest black people. If there was a white person in your neighborhood and he was showing off, then the white policemen had to come and arrest that person. The black policemen couldn't arrest white folks. We were just sitting off to ourselves, I would say, when it came to having somebody to help you. But when Leon came back from his journey that he went away to another country and helped organize, then he knew just what Kansas City would get when he got back here. And that's what we got. We got a good convert, good organization, and a good neighborhood group.
What did Leon Jordan come back with that changed the approach to how you guys sought racial justice?
He came back with, we need to bring our peoples together. We need to organize them and work together. And that was the main thing that we didn't know how to do too well as black folks, because we had been working with white folks so much. But when he came out there with us, now far as, white folks liking what he was doing, no. But in the meantime, he was brave enough and he was strong enough to go up against anybody's fight, because he was that way in Jefferson City even. And we always had good representation.
Emil Cleaver, talk about some of the resistance that Freedom Inc. faced in its early inception when it came in and changed things wholesale. For instance, a figure emerges in the film, Felix Payne. Tell us about Felix Payne.
Well, Felix Payne was a gambler in the 40s, so he kind of ran the black community at one point. But really during when Freedom came along, the person who was put in charge of the African-American community by the North End was Lewis Wagner. But there were a lot of, I was told that there were a lot of even African-American organizations who tried to come up and go against Freedom. When they first started, I was told that they had a hard time getting African Americans to vote for their candidates because they were so used to voting for the North End candidates. So there was a lot of resistance. Leon Jordan, I was told he was a person, like Ms. Lowe said, he didn't mind a fight. He didn't back down from anyone. Ultimately that probably led to his death.
What resistance did you face on the ground, Ms. Lowe?
Actually, to tell you the truth, Babyface was the only one still working with the black, with the white people. And he was the one who came out against Freedom, and we didn't have no problem with Babyface, because when Leon told him to shut up and sit down, he took that seat.
Did Babyface have a government name? Do you know Babyface's real name?
Sylvester Norris.
Sylvester Norris. Mm-hmm.
But he lived, he was the committee man in the Second Ward, where Bruce and Miss Denman went up there and beat him real bad. And they got to be the committee man, committee woman up there. So we didn't have no trouble with shutting Babyface up.
Shut him up real good.
Yes, because Leon didn't back off of nobody.
Speaking of which, who was the first candidate that Freedom Inc. put into office, and how did that create this sort of domino effect of the black community taking its power back here in Kansas City?
Leon Jordan and myself. He was the committee man, I was the committee woman. That was the first ballot that Freedom put out.
And he was the first candidate?
Yes.
In the city council?
Bruce Watkins.
Bruce Watkins was the first
candidate
in the city
council. Leon Jordan was the president of Freedom, and that you said the first ballot.
Right.
So I thought you meant the first ballot that Freedom was doing to get the 14th Ward.
But we've clarified that it was indeed Bruce Watkins who became the first actual candidate, right, that Freedom Inc. helped put in?
No.
Bruce was the first city council. I think the first candidate
City council, but this is the point. Unless you have a committee man, a committee woman, you don't own the ward. And that's how you get the ward, by having a committee man, committee woman in the ward. And the 14th ward was the first ward Freedom had, and that was Leon Jordan and myself. And then we went to the second ward for the next election, and that was Bruce and Lucia Denman. But far as getting elected to a position, well, Bruce got that city council seat.
But it was an effort of everybody.
Yes.
Is what you're saying.
Yes. Wasn't no one or two people. It was all of us working to get him elected.
Emil, what happened after they got their first candidate into office? What changes did we start to see in the city?
Well, you started, first of all, you were seeing black people in higher positions. And Freedom started to get stronger. More candidates came along. First it was, one or two candidates who were elected. And as the years went by, more and more candidates were elected, and things started to change in the black community because of that.
And what types of things started to change?
More jobs. Like Ms. Lowe said, that they had a lot of jobs at the county. Bruce Watkins, I believe, was a county clerk, and in that position, you had a lot of jobs that you could give to African Americans, and once African Americans have jobs, things start to change. Just like today, if you have jobs, a lot of things change.
With more community members in positions of power downtown, how did that change the sway that Freedom Inc. had in political discussions, Ms. Rosemary?
Well, the real thing about it is when Freedom got organized, and with the power that Freedom had when they went out there, it changed everything. Because whereas we couldn't do a lot of things, as you say, then people started right away fixing it where Freedom could go any place they wanted to. But Leon Jordan and Bruce, what I'm saying, it wasn't just a thing that Freedom could do. I was listening at what he was saying, but Freedom was just free. It wasn't like you was just opening this up because Freedom didn't come out here. It was a thing that it was happening because they was working with us. All of the neighborhoods came together. and they started working, because at that time we had neighborhood people all over everywhere working. And the people that didn't live in the wards that Freedom had committee peoples, they were supporting us because they wanted Freedom to grow, and it did.
Yeah, and I also have something to add on that, you know, as Freedom started winning elections, there were white candidates who started coming in and trying to be endorsed by Freedom, because they knew that if they had Freedom on board, they would win those black wards. So, you know, that kind of gave them a little bit more power with other candidates.
Our guest is Emil Cleaver, budding local filmmaker and son of former mayor and current U.S. Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II. The name of his documentary project is Freedom Is Now, a survey of a civil rights organization called Freedom, Inc. We are also joined by Rosemary Lowe, a subject in the film and one of the ground floor members of the organization who has served the community of Kansas City all of her life. The film is screening Friday at 6:30 p.m. at the Plaza Library. There will also be a special panel discussion Saturday at noon at the Black Archives of Mid-America. Visit our website, kcur.org, for more information about how to RSVP for both events. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we discuss the death of one of the founding members of Freedom, Inc., Leon Jordan, and also what the organization is up to in modern times as it celebrates its 51st anniversary this year. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today's guest says he'll never live anywhere but Kansas City, the city he was raised in and a city whose history he now documents. That man is Emil Cleaver, a budding local filmmaker and son of the former mayor and current U.S. Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II. The name of his documentary project is Freedom Is Now, a survey of Kansas City's first civil rights organization and political club. We're also joined by Rosemary Lowe, a subject of the film, who was on the ground floor of the founding of Freedom, Inc. The film, Freedom Is Now, will be screened Friday at 6:30 at the Plaza Library, and there will also be a panel discussion Saturday at noon at the Black Archives of Mid-America. Emil, you come from a political family and a family of clergy. Why did you decide not to enter clergy or politics?
Well, politics is real easy because I couldn't sit there and let a candidate say something about me and not get upset. You know, as soon as he says something about me, I'm walking over to him and like, you know, what's up, man? And, you know, the election is over. You know, I lose.
And I guess by that rationale, if you're going to go give it to somebody that just said something about you, that pretty much rules out clergy as well.
I would think so, yeah.
When you approached your father, Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II, for this project, what were his thoughts on it?
Well, I didn't tell him I was doing the project. He just showed up for an interview. You know, I can't, if you know anything about him, you can't schedule anything with him. So I called his secretary, the person who makes his schedule, called her and put an interview on his schedule. So I think he just showed up. And when he showed up, he found out that, you know, I was interviewing him about Freedom Incorporated.
Well, the word around town is that you literally, you have to catch Rev, as they say. So you got to catch him with an interview instead of schedule something. But once he did sit down and discovered what you were doing, what were some of his initial thoughts?
Well, I think he thought it was an important organization. He first joined because of Bruce Watkins. He was kind of encouraged to run for the 5th District Council seat against Bruce Watkins originally. And he had just started with his church. So he wanted to get his name off the ballot, but it was too late. So he just stopped running. And Bruce Watkins, of course, won that race. But after the race, Bruce Watkins asked members of Freedom, well, who knows Emmanuel Cleaver? And Mr. Welch, Archie Welch, who was a good friend of my father, said, I know him. So Bruce was like, well, go get him. He needs to be a part of this organization. So that was kind of how he was introduced to Freedom. And Bruce Watkins actually encouraged him to run for 5th District again when Bruce ran for mayor.
And what were your early memories, Miss Rosemary Lowe, of this man's father, Emmanuel Cleaver II, joining the organization Freedom, Inc.?
Well, I have to say this. My friend wasn't acting up. He wasn't insulted. He just was being a normal sweetheart. and Reverend Cleaver is a very sweet person. So if he backed off, he wasn't backing off because he was upset. He just would do that because that's the kind of person he is.
Emil, how does the film, having to rely mostly on oral histories and anecdotal evidence of the evolution of Freedom, Inc., rather than documents or primary sources, how does that inform the tone of your film?
Well, it kind of makes things difficult because not everyone has the same memory. Things are remembered one way by one person and another way by someone else. So, you know, I kind of had to decipher for myself what was correct, you know, and I may have gotten some of it wrong.
For instance, there's some arguments, sort of urban legend, as it were, about the founding of Freedom, Inc. and who the actual founders were and who may not have been there that day to take a picture of what. Tell us about that. And I'm sure Rosemary might have some thoughts on that.
Well,
being there,
you know, I guess the five people that everyone knows, of course, is Leon Jordan, Bruce Watkins, Fred Curls, Howard Maupin, and Dr. Charles Moore. But through my research, I also discovered that Leonard Hughes and Marion Foote were heavily involved. I was told that Leonard Hughes actually came up with the name Freedom Incorporated and drew the logo. But like Ms. Lowe said, there were also other names that were thrown in that could have been a part of the founding group. As more than the seven, you know, like she said, there were 20 people at the meeting. But I think mainly that those five that were in a picture the day that the organization was incorporated, there are five people in the pictures, the first five that I named. So I think they get the main credit for founding the organization.
Miss Rosemary, you were there. What's missing?
I would like to say to you also, I heard that Marion Foote's name was in there, but Marion Foote was working for the city at City Hall, and the city employees could not participate in politics. And therefore, even though she would come and sit in our meeting sometime, but she was not a part of it because of her job. So I'm only saying I think that was a little wrong because, you know, if you listen to it and you know the city rules and regulation, and she worked for the city until she retired, and she couldn't participate, but she came to our meetings. Her father was a very good person that was in Freedom. And there was a lot of things her father had been politically in that he was coming to help Freedom with. And Marion would too, but she was never a member.
Are there any misconceptions about Freedom, Inc. that are out there today about the time when it was founded that you'd like to clear up here from being there?
I'm not going to clear it up, but I say it's a lot of falses out there. And I think when people don't know, they should find out before they get out and kind of put things down. Because Freedom come a long ways. And if it was not for Freedom today, I don't know where we would be. Because we are suffering for leadership. And seem like the Black community has forgotten that. And with these things coming out that we don't want to do this with this and we want to boss this, that's not working. If we can't come together and vote together and bring our votes up, because it's going to be hard this next election because the lines has changed. And with the lines changing like they did, and with a lot of them going out in eastern Jackson County and all, it's going to bring our votes down. So we're going to have to start cooperating and trying to be friends with everybody so all of our candidates can win.
Emil, did you see the sort of double challenge of telling a story where many people had different versions of the events as well as bringing it forward? What were the challenges first technically on what to include and what not to include? And then address the challenge of what she mentions, the Black flight and the segmentation of Black community organizations today.
Well, trying to figure out what to put in the film, that was the biggest challenge. I mean, editing took the most time, you know, but I just had to ask people who were there and do my own research to kind of figure out what to put in the film. And I tried not to do anything based on opinion. You know, most of what I put in there, it was fact. Freedom did this, they did that, you know, and I didn't try to get in too much with opinion. You know, the only opinion that I put in there was toward the end when I asked people, is there still a need for freedom? So I tried to use the basic. Now, freedom has been around over 50 years, so and this film is an hour. So, of course, there are a lot of things that I didn't put in. There are a lot of people I didn't get to interview. But hopefully I can keep on going. You know, I could probably do a 5-6-part series with the interviews that I didn't use, plus more interviews.
You mentioned that it could have been a 5- or 6-part series. What happened that you ended up deciding to condense it into 1 hour?
Well, I didn't think that people would want to sit in front of a television or a big screen for more than an hour, first of all. So that was the main reason. And, you know, putting something together that was longer, I need more photos. You know, archives, they're hard to come by. You know, and as I started doing the film, you know, people started calling saying, you know, you need to talk to her. She has pictures. Irene Marcus had pictures, and Joe Louis Maddox had pictures. So finding pictures to cover a 2-hour or 3-hour documentary was hard. You know, the news stations didn't keep old footage from the 60s and 70s. Tape was expensive, so once they did a story, they taped over it.
And speaking of pictures, we will have some pictures up on our website at kcur.org of some of the civil rights luminaries here in this film and luminaries who helped bring the organization forward. Now, you discovered something newish about the death of Leon Jordan for your film and sort of went further into that and what the reasons might have been. What was that?
Well, I don't think that it was new. I mean, the Kansas City Star did a lot of research, and I just kind of put together what they said and what people at that time remembered.
What was new is that you asked the people involved about the death. And what did you find out?
Well, there was an incident down at the State House with Leon Jordan and a state representative named Frank Mazuka. And Leon Jordan hit him on the floor in the house, punched him. And this caused tension. It was about 5 years later where he was assassinated. In front of the Green Duck, he was killed by 4 black men with shotguns, but they were hired by an Italian mafia member who was not the godfather, or so-called godfather, but I guess he was trying to get in good with the godfather at that time, who was Nick Civella. So he authorized this hit. And at the time, they all got away with it. No one was ever convicted for his murder. But years later now, we kind of pieced together who was involved with that murder.
Rosemary, how did the organization readjust after Mr. Jordan's death?
It was a very hard thing to do. And Bruce Watkins took over. And he really, really done a beautiful job. And I would like to say there couldn't have been a better person to take the job over that Leon had left us with. And I think they need to stop talking about the assassination of Leon Jordan, because every time somebody tells it, they tell it different. And nobody has really actually come out with the real truth until it was said who did it. And even though he said it was 4 of them, but, you know, the people down there knew how many it was because they saw them. And there was people sitting outside when Leon came outside to get in his car, and they saw it. And when they got through, the assassination was over, they went over to Babyface and parked in the back of his business, and that's where they left the car that assassinated him. And what I'm saying is, there should be no conversation about it, because the police was at my house every day and every other day, and I wasn't even down there. But the point of it was, you got the whole picture doing that. And the one that assassinated him, they found out who it was.
So why do you think that there was so much mystery about that?
Because people talk about things they don't know. Everybody wants to know. And nobody really know the truth. I heard. And when you get through it, I heard. You got a whole lot of stuff mixed up. And what I'm saying is, at that particular time, people didn't really know what they was talking about. They was just wanting to be the one that knew it.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 on your FM dial. KCUR, streaming live at KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Emil Cleaver, a local filmmaker and son of former mayor and current U.S. Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II. The name of his new documentary project is Freedom Is Now, and it's a look at the local civil rights organization, the first in Kansas City, by the way, Freedom, Inc. We're also joined by Rosemary Lowe, a subject of the film, and a woman who has served the community all her life in many different capacities. Emil, you did something, shall we say, extraordinary for your film, a little out of the box. You wrote a rap song, Freedom Tonight. Tell us about that.
Well, I needed some music. As the credits were rolling, I wanted to get a, put a song up as they rolled. So I decided to put together a song. You know, I've always been into hip hop, you know, ever since I was a kid. So, you know, this was an opportunity for people to hear my skills. So
Miss Rosemary is very excited about your rap, by the way.
Oh yeah,
that's it. Good.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, so I put together a theme song, I guess, about freedom, talking about their history and whatnot, and you know, it was a lot of fun doing it.
You sound like you had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun.
What lyrics in particular do you hope people listen for as they're watching the film and seeing it at the closing of the credits?
Well, I hope they listen to the entire song. You know, it starts out, you know, kind of talking about what was going on in the African-American community at that time. I talk about Bruce and Leon Jordan, you know, how they were prominent figures, you know, to stand up against racism at that time. So, you know, I can't think of one thing that sticks out right now. You know, I really like the second verse, I guess. The second verse is pretty cool.
Well, let's do it. Freedom Tonight by Emil Cleaver, written and rapped, flowed. Let's check it out.
And me and my people can't take no more. It's my life, my right, my time to fight. Cause I'm gonna get my freedom tonight. This is for the pioneers that paid the dues, that fought the good fight, but didn't make the news. Names left out of the history books. I paint a picture, show you just how history looks. KC Mo, the town is wide open. Paris of the plains with gambling, drinking, smoking. It seems to be tied to the underworld, but they seem to be on top cause they run the world. The mafia, the machine.
That's Freedom Tonight by Emil Cleaver, a musical pairing for his documentary about the formation of KC's first political club, Freedom, Inc. Getting back to the documentary, one of the first high-profile elections Freedom, Inc. was heavily involved in, or the last ones, rather, was your father's mayoral election. Why is that? Why does that seem to be a watershed?
Well, at that time, I think during that time, that's when freedom was at its strength. There was the election of Alan Wheat to the U.S. Congress, and he won in a predominantly white district. And around that time, my father was elected mayor of Kansas City, and he was the first African-American mayor. And that was in 91, and believe it or not, there was still a lot of blatant racism during that election. I mean, we had the election of the current mayor, and you didn't really hear too much about race. But in 1991, that was a big issue. I mean, there was a lot of blatant racism.
It's interesting that you mentioned the election of the current mayor, Sylvester Sly James, the current mayor of Kansas City. Freedom Inc., interestingly enough, actually originally backed another candidate, Jim Rowland, instead of Sly James. How did that come about?
Well, I wasn't at the meetings, but yeah, I think that they endorsed Jim Rowland in the primary. Now, in the general, they did back our mayor, Sly James. You know, I don't know why. Maybe Ms. Lowe could probably better answer why they backed Mr. Rowland.
Do you have some ideas as to why Freedom Inc. backed Mr. Rowland?
I'd like to take the Fifth Amendment on that. I know why, but I don't want to discuss it.
All right, all right. Well, tell us, speaking of which, what's changed about Freedom Inc.? You mentioned a sort of leadership vacuum, and what needs to change now that we're looking at an organization 51 years?
Well, we need to be able to bring people back together. Seem like they're getting apart. And with this paper coming out every week and with Freedom, people are getting confused. And pretty soon, we won't have no togetherness. And unless we all together as Black Americans, we cannot get any place. So my thing is, we need to be together. And what makes me feel awfully bad is we're not together.
With the memory of an elephant that we use on Central Standard, I'm going to come back to a question, the second part of the question I asked you a couple moments ago, the Black Flight question, the segmentation of the African-American community here in the Kansas City metro area that prevents, in a lot of ways, political consensus. Tell us about that challenge, Emil.
Well, I believe that's the case. You have Black people now who are able to move out of the inner city. And a lot of them, not all, but a lot of them tend to forget where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to forget how people in the inner city are living. So they go on with their suburban lives and kind of forget about the struggle. And that I think that is part of the problem that Freedom may be encountering now, trying to get people organized. When I did a pre-screening for high school students, this documentary, there were students who had never heard of Bruce R. Watkins, never heard of Leon Jordan, never heard of Congressman Cleaver. This is today. They never heard of Freedom Incorporated. So,
did you get mad at them? Did you say, you ain't heard of my pops? Did you?
No, I didn't get mad at them, you know, because a lot of it isn't their fault.
Right.
You know, they're
right.
Not being taught that.
Certainly.
Now, they did hear of the street. You know, they knew about the street, but they didn't know about who he was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You chose, Emil, not to address the current infighting in the organization of the film. For instance, a past president of the organization appears in the film, but not the current president. What happened, and how come you shied away from a focus on the current reality and kind of just told the story of the historic organization?
Well, that was the reason. The current president, he wasn't in the documentary because he didn't have time. You know, when I was down there, it was election day. So he didn't really have time to be in the film, but he did help out giving me old video footage. But I chose not to focus on today because like what I said, you know, there are kids out there who have never heard of Freedom. There are people my age who have never heard of Freedom Incorporated. So I didn't want their introduction to Freedom to be negative. I wanted them to get the positive, you know, because Freedom has done more positive than negative.
What needs to happen, Rosemary Lowe, going forward with the organization beyond unity? What needs to happen?
We really need good leadership that can sit down and bring people together and be able to work with all of us and not just a few of us. Because unless we get that, we're going to lose what we've already gained. And at this point, as weak as our votes are, the last election we had at Lucille Bluford's, it wasn't 50 people came and voted. And the last big election that this county and the city had, we only had, where we usually have 800-900 voters, we only had like 400-something. So to me, that's upsetting, and it makes me feel bad because I don't know where we're going to go from here.
Emil, you told The Star recently that you think racism in this city is less blatant, though it still exists. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, all anyone needs to do is drive down Troost. East of Troost and west of Troost, there are two different worlds. And actually, the person who interviewed me for that article was not from Kansas City. And she was surprised when she came here, the difference between east and west of Troost. So I think that is the big point, the elephant in the room as far as Kansas City is concerned. I mean, everyone who lives here, who's been around, knows, you know, about east of Troost and west of Troost. East of Troost, of course, is the African-American community, and west of Troost is a beautiful, rich place, you know, but you throw a rock on the other side of Troost and, you know, it's not good.
What do you hope to that end that people get out of this film?
Well, first I want to educate them about Freedom Incorporated. And hopefully, maybe they could, it could bring some new members, to Freedom. You know, as I asked everyone toward the end, what does Freedom need to do? And most of them said they need to get more young people involved. With Young Freedom, that's kind of how the organization grew. You know, from Young Freedom, when it was started, Charles Hasley came out of Young Freedom, who was on the city council for 20 years, Phil Curls, state senator, Archie Welch, president of Freedom. So I think grooming younger people to get involved with politics and teaching them about politics, I think that that would help the organization tremendously.
Budding local filmmaker and son of former mayor and current sitting U.S. Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II, Emil Cleaver, is here rapping about his new project, Freedom, Inc. Freedom Is Now, a survey of Freedom, Inc. We're also joined by Rosemary Lowe, a subject in the film, and one of the members on the ground floor who has served Kansas City and the community thereof all her life. The film is screaming Friday at 6:30 at the Plaza Library. There will also be a panel discussion Saturday at noon at the Black Archives of Mid-America. And visit our website, kcur.org, for more information about how to RSVP for both events. Emil, Miss Rosemary, thank you very much for coming on Central Standard today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And tune in tomorrow as we look at a special trial being given to a Missouri death row inmate, plus the story of a mother who is doing the time on the outside with her son doing the time on the inside. Also, we'll meet the new African art curator at the Nelson Atkins Museum. Our show is produced by Andrea Salinzi with help from Charlie Upchurch. Up to Date is next with U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.